podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. And Ned, he laughed so hard it made me cry.
Hello and welcome to the Run, Run, Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of shoes and get out there. This is Chris, your host, and whenever and wherever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in today. Here's the agenda for the podcast. My goal is to keep it around 40 minutes and keep it chock full of content. First, I'll lead with a quick introduction. Then, we'll give you the equipment check, where we talk about some piece of a technology or other collateral running stuff. Each show will be wrapped around a featured segment, where we interview someone interesting from our running world. I'll follow that with a quick tip derived from my centuries of running experience. We'll wrap it up with some music of our guest choosing from the PodSafe Music Network. Some things we're not going to do. I'm going to try to avoid recording myself while running. All that heavy breathing is just a little creepy for me. And there'll be no extended monologuing. I'm going to try to keep to the facts. If you want the emotional content, you can visit my blog, the Runnerati blog, at www.runrunlive.com. Please leave me an audio comment at, and you better write this down, or better yet, program the number into your cell phone, 206-339-7804, or send me an email at chrisrunner@runrunlive.com. And thanks for listening. Let me know what you think. Plus, you know, the more comments you leave, the less you have to listen to me talk. So, are you ready to have some fun? Come on, let's go for a run. Hey, this is Chris. Got some great stuff lined up for you here. I got a two-part interview with Mike from Loco Running. He's the guy who started Loco Shoes, the Loco company there. And I'm going to break it into two pieces because it was a very long interview, but he's going to talk about how to pick shoes and all about the shoe industry and stuff like that. He's a great local guy, good supporter of the sport. And then I also have in the can another good interview with my buddy Kevin Malloy from Australia, and we'll talk more about that. So we're going to do part one today, and it's been a busy couple of weeks for me. Had a little mini vacation down on Cape Cod. Maybe I'll squeeze in some of those comments. I've been putting a lot of miles in on the weekends. My ultra training is getting into its ultra phase, and I'm struggling with how to stay awake most of the time from all the time I'm spending on my feet. So I think you're really going to enjoy the tip I have today, which is about how to get your Timex watch repaired, your Iron Man watch, because we all have a couple of those. And you know, when the battery dies or the watch band breaks, it's hard to find. You don't want to throw it away, but it's very hard to find somebody to fix it for you. What you want to do is, there's this place that fixes them. It's called, and I'll give you the address here, and you can listen to the bit during the equipment check, but the address is Hotline Watch Service, P.O. Box 8009, Little Rock, Arkansas, zip code 72203-8009, and they did a great job with my watch, so let's get going.
And now for the equipment check.
Hey, this is Chris down at the pond. Some folks out fishing out here, letting Fur Boy go for a swim. It's a hot day. Afternoon, had a little thunderstorm, but now it's warmed up again. Gotta let Fur Boy get his water. That's okay, go for a swim, man. So anyhow, I got a tip for you today. I got a great tip for you. You know, watches, right? When you run, you need a watch, because you're going to be doing splits and stuff. Now, you can get by with a $5 or $10 watch from Walmart, but it may fail at the wrong time, like in the middle of a race or something. You know, anything with a stopwatch on it is going to work. Typically, those watches, they still say water-resistant on them. That doesn't mean anything. They're not really resistant to water, but the bands on them tend to break a lot, too. So most of us runners and triathletes are going to have have a Timex Iron Man of some sort. And they're cool now. You even see the executives in suits and ties wearing their Timex Iron Man. And the issue with the Iron Mans, though, is after you wear them in the pool for a while, the bands break on you, and the bands are really, really hard to replace. It takes somebody with tiny little fingers to do this, not big meat hands like me. And the other thing is the batteries die eventually, right? And what people do is they go, oh, well, we're smart, we'll replace the battery ourselves. And if you try to replace the battery yourself, typically you'll mess it up and the case won't close right. So I had two broken watches on my desk for like a year and a half, you know, no battery, one broken band. So what I did is I shipped them off to this place. It's a watch repair center. It's someplace in Little Rock, Arizona, and they're a Timex affiliate of some sort. And these guys fixed both my watches. They put new batteries in them, and they changed the bands, and I think I ended up paying like $20. So, I mean, hey, the watches themselves are only $20-$30, but hey, I'm keeping them out of the landfill. I feel a lot better about this, you know. So that was a great find, and I would recommend that. So, get the one with the light and the 30 laps, so you can do your laps and do your laps at night, and go with the watch. That's my tip for today. Me and the Budster are gonna take off. Looks like he's cooled down.
And now for our featured interview.
Mike, you there?
I am here.
Hey, it worked again.
Yeah.
I'm always amazed by technology. So how are you doing? I haven't seen you since, I haven't seen you physically since January 1st up at that crazy ocean plunge race that we did.
Oh, yeah. I could go for an ocean plunge right now.
Absolutely.
I'm doing pretty good. I had a good spring. I ran a couple half marathons. I actually ran like a 1:38 half marathon up at Big Lake, which was good for me because I don't do a lot of distance, so I was happy to do that.
Hey, you know, I ran a 1:40 half marathon, but it happened to be up the side of Mount Washington.
Oh yeah, that's it. That's it. Exactly the equivalent.
And I saw your guys there. I didn't see you, but your guys were there.
Yeah, I was getting ready for the Smutty Nose race the next day. So,
what race?
The Smutty Nose Will Run for Beer, our race finale.
Oh, okay. Yep. Okay. All right. Yeah, so you have to update me on all these events you got going because it seems like there's more and more of them every time I get your newsletter.
Yeah.
And so that's great. That's great. So so one of the things I wanted to do is this is the question I always get from new runners, which is, like I said, is a philosophical question, but maybe we can throw some data around it, which is, how do I choose a pair of shoes, right? What's the best shoes for me? People always ask me this, and like, there's no answer, right? But there's some definite guidelines you can give them to take some of the emotion out of it.
Right.
So what do you tell them when they ask you?
I always go into saying the most important thing is fit.
Right.
To start with, in that even if you have the best shoe technology-wise that you think will work for you, if it doesn't fit your foot, it doesn't matter what the technology is inside.
Right.
You actually have to work first to see do you have a wide foot or a narrow foot, or, you know, if the shoe doesn't feel comfortable, it doesn't matter what the technology is, then it's not going to work for you. And the key thing on picking out shoes is when you try a pair of shoes on is to try them on at the right time of the day. Put them on the same time that you usually run. So if you run in the morning, shop for shoes in the morning. Or if you run in the evening, shop for shoes later in the day. Because your feet actually change throughout the day.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. I never would have thought of that.
Yeah, they change by about a half a size or more. You know, on really hot days when you stand your feet a lot, your feet can actually get a whole size bigger. So I've had people that have tried shoes on at the end of the day, and they say they run in the morning, and, you know, the next day, they call up and say, well, they feel too big. And I say, well, it's because you tried them on the end of the day and you didn't tell me what you ran. The next thing is that, when you put the shoes on to walk around in them, kind of get a feel for them, and then I have people stand actually on one foot, and both feet, I figure which the biggest foot is. And when you stand on one foot, that's better than standing on 2 feet, because when you run, you run on 1 foot at a time. You don't stand on 2 feet. So you have all your weight on 1 foot, and it spreads your foot out more. And if you fit your biggest foot, standing on 1 foot with all your weight on it, that's the closest thing you can approximate to checking for the fit, for the length in particular.
Yeah, because typically I find that's true that I know I am, but most people are what they call, bilaterally asymmetric, mm-hmm. meaning that one side of your body is typically bigger than the other side of your body.
Right.
It's typically your dominant side. So for me, it's my right foot. My right foot's bigger than my left foot. So it causes two problems for me when I'm doing shoes. The first one is my right foot is going to be at risk in the toe box of the right shoe with my big toe losing that toenail. But equally important, my left shoe is going to be at my left foot's going to be at risk in the toe box of the left one because it's going to be too loose.
Yeah.
Right. So
yeah, that's,
so
that's always tricky. Yeah. So I always fit the biggest foot because if the other foot slops around a little bit, that's not as bad than having a shoe that's too small for you and then losing a toenail on a long run.
Right, and what I found was on the exactly what you're saying, which is you can't fix it being too small, but you can fix it being too wide or too loose. You just change the lacing.
Yeah.
Right?
Tighten it up a little bit.
Yeah, there's different lacing configurations you can do to make it tighter in different parts of the foot.
Right.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, and then the next thing that I get into is, you know, there's always a question of do I need a stability shoe or what do I need? Do I pronate? Do I overpronate? And, you know, the best, it's really hard to tell because the key thing is if you run only 2 or 3 miles at a time and you pronate a little bit, it really doesn't matter because you're not going to get any overuse injuries.
Right.
So if you get this heavy, clunky shoe and you only run 2 or 3 miles at a time, A, you've got a shoe that's not giving you as much cushion, you know, lots of support, and it's just not as comfortable, and you're kind of sacrificing, you always are sacrificing cushion for stability. There's no shoe out there that gives you, you know, it's very, very stable, but it's also very cushioned, because what you do is when you make the shoe firmer to provide really good stability, you lose some of the benefits of the cushioning, because the material gets firmer and harder, all those things. So if you're a runner that needs a stability shoe and you do a lot of mileage, that's important. But I find a lot of people get stability shoes or shoes with stability that really don't need them. And then the issue is you're kind of sacrificing the comfort and cushion that you lose when you go into a stability shoe.
Right. So, and that's always been a little frustrating for me. When I go out to get shoes, people look at me and they go, you need a huge shoe because you're 200 pounds, right?
Yeah, but
I'm actually a very efficient runner, and I don't need any control. You know, I have a neutral stride, right?
Yeah. So that is a fallacy. I have people that email me all the time says I'm 240 pounds, 6'2". I need your big guy shoe. And I say, well, any of our shoes can handle you. It depends on what your foot is like and your foot strike is like.
Exactly.
It's like just because you're a big guy doesn't mean that you need one. But if you're a big guy and you're a heavy heel hitter, then, yeah, you do.
Yeah, you need it in the heel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Basically, because if you're really pounding that heel, you're breaking down the foam.
Right,
really
and you'll feel
hard.
That. You'll feel that in your Achilles as you bring up the miles.
Right. Yeah, you're feeling a lot of places. So you basically will break down your shoes in 150, 200 miles if you're a heavy heel hitter and wearing them out fast on the heel. So.
Right.
But so that's why it's always so tough and picking out shoes for people. So it's got to do with what your foot is like, what the fit is like, how you land, when you run, how much you run. And then there are other things that are smaller things. Like if you run a lot of miles and if you do long runs, you can – I have people that I talk to a lot and say, use your cushion neutral shoe for your short runs that are 3, 5, 8 miles because your feet don't change any over 3, 5, or 8 miles. But if you're running an 18-miler, some people wear a stability shoe because basically when your feet get tired, they pronate more.
You start to relax.
Yeah, so what happens is your arch gets tired, your feet get tired, your muscles get tired. And actually, if you run, you can actually, if you pronate badly, you can actually control how much your foot pronates by just paying attention to it.
Right.
When you run. But then once you start to get tired, that gets harder and harder to do on the long runs, and your feet start to slap and your foot rolls in. And there are some people that, they run slower and they tend to pronate more when they do their long runs. So some people say, well, I have shoes I use for my long runs and I have shoes I use for my regular runs, and I just alternate them according to the days that I'm running. And, that's a fairly smart thing to do.
Yeah.
The other thing that's interesting is I do talk to different podiatrists, and the better podiatrists try to resolve the issues that people have with their feet with a really good insert or custom orthotic, and then you run in a neutral shoe with something that's corrected the problem. So you take away the problems of getting this heavy, clunky stability shoe by using a neutral shoe and keeping all the cushioning, but then correcting whatever issue you have with a custom orthotic that's not too hard And that's the best of both worlds, to say that, you know, I do have an issue and I've corrected it and I'm not losing all the cushioning, because I just had many horror stories. People says, well, I used to run pretty good and then I had a problem. I went into a store. It's almost like a book you could write, the same book over and over. And the guy says, well, you have a problem, so I want you to put you in this motion controls you. And they say, I've never been the same since. I ran on that for 6 months, and other things started to happen, and it was a problem.
Right, your knees start to hurt, your hips start to hurt, because it's
unnatural. And then you keep on thinking something else, and all along, you just lost all the cushioning, and all the shock is being transferred up through your knees and your ankles and your hips, and you know, and the thing that was bad doesn't get any better because everything else hurts.
At the end of the day, there's a line you can draw. You can say, you know, if you're running less than, you know, let's say, you know, 20 miles a week, you can probably get away with any kind of cushion shoe.
Yeah, or just a good cushion shoe that fits your foot well, and you think you might get more out of a shoe by having something professionally fit you, you know, and stuff, but the odds are that you could walk into most stores and pick up a good $60, $70 shoe and it'd be just fine for you.
Yep.
And that way you're more likely to replace it when you need it to, because one of the other issues is, I spend $100 on a shoe, so I get it last all year, as opposed to paying a little bit less and then replacing them twice a year.
Right.
So that you don't get, you know, you're not running on shoes that are uneven or the cushioning's already all broken down.
Yeah, and you and I talked about this before. It's actually really funny how emotional runners are about their shoes.
Right.
And it's just there's so much emotional content wrapped around those shoes. I mean, I talk to other people and, you know, I ask the question, how many shoes do you have? And you see them just sort of smile and turn red.
Yeah.
Right? Because most of these guys have 40 pairs of shoes in their closet somewhere, right? I mean, I try to keep it under five, but, you know, when you get to the point where you're running a lot, you have a pair of track shoes, you know, for speed work.
Yeah.
You have a couple pairs of road shoes that you can rotate. You have a couple of pairs of trail shoes you can rotate, you know, and that's probably the minimum for somebody who's doing a lot of miles.
Yeah.
So it's really an emotional issue. And so and I think one of the reasons that you ended up starting your company was that you got frustrated with people, with the big shoe companies reinventing their shoes every year just purely for marketing purposes without regard to the fact that somebody really liked that shoe and liked it the way it was.
Well, the key thing is that there are people in the industry that are like me, that are runners, that have developed shoes, and then they bring them before the marketing people that make the ultimate decision, and then they say, well, we have to change it more. Because it looks too much like the last model. And I used to go up against this all the time when I worked for the different other shoe companies. And basically it's taking things out or putting things in just because the marketing person thought you were going to gain more market share or somebody else was having success with a certain thing that looked like it in their shoe.
Yep.
And it had nothing to do with the function of the shoe. It had to do with the look of the shoe or just the cosmetic technology.
In all fairness to the marketing people, you know, probably, I don't know, you know better than I do because you work for shoe companies. You know, what percentage of these running shoes are actually sold to serious runners? You know, is it like 15% or is it?
Yeah, I would say it's about, I'd say about 20% go to people that actually run in them and the other 80% go to people that never run in them.
Right. So
it's the tail wagging the dog, basically, in that, you know, it's got to look really cool and technical, so those 80% continue to buy it.
Right.
And the runners have to just keep on jumping back and forth from model to model to figure out what works.
Right.
Which is exactly how the industry is right now.
I've heard a lot of, you know, again, a lot of the runners I talk to, they'll say, you know, I really liked this, you know, Nike Pegasus from 1984, but then they stopped making it.
Yeah.
You know? Or they change the toe box and now it tears my toes off, right?
Right.
So that's you're spot on with that that and the emotional content that people wrap around their shoes.
Yeah. Well, there's another fallacy too that the more the shoe costs, the better it is for you. And it's like I think somebody once did a survey of people, you know, that did a lot of running. People, you know, ran 50 miles a week or more. And, you know, so what shoes do you buy? And, you know, 99.9% of them bought shoes that are like in the $70 to $80 range, and
right.
They never ever bought anything over $100. They really didn't need to. The shoes weren't any better, and these are people that, you know, run a lot. And then it's never been proven that, you know, a much more expensive shoe is a better shoe. And being in the industry, I know that sometimes you just throw stuff on a shoe to justify the price.
Right. So
say, well, it's got to cost $150. I got to put something on there that makes it look like it's worth it, but it doesn't actually perform any function. It just kind of looks more technical than it really is.
Yeah, the component quality is not changing.
Right.
Right, right. I mean, right. And some of those, though, have a lot of engineering content, some of those shoes. The way I and I did the exact same thing. When I was training for my first marathon, I walked into the shoe store and I said, what's the most expensive shoe you have?
Right.
Because, you know, I'm training for a marathon, that's what I need. And I bought that $150 pair of, you know, Nike Airs or whatever they were.
Uh-huh.
And then what I learned was the best place to figure out what the good shoes are is go to your local road race and talk to the other runners or talk to the runners in your club, and they'll tell you what works, what the real scoop is, right?
Right. Right. That's the very best way to see what works. Just because it works for other people doesn't mean it works for you, but at least you'll eliminate the reason for trying the really expensive shoes that are just there for marketing reason.
Right. And chances are, as a high mileage mid-packer, you're going to get put into some shoes that aren't real flashy looking, you know, but they're going to be the best shoes for you.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the key thing is to find something that works and be able to stick with it and not have to worry about it changing on you all the time.
Right.
The cycle of shoes used to be that shoes stuck around for a couple years, but, you know, it got down to 18 months, and now it's down to about a year. You know, every year you have to revise a model. It's just endless churn of new models.
But not logo shoes.
No, that's right. We keep our shoes around. We've had our same designs for 4 years, going on 5 years now, and I think in the future we may just keep shoes around for 3 years. That's what the market tells us, that people want something a little bit newer looking every 3 years. But we're in the process of designing a couple of new shoes right now that we should have out by the end of this year.
You going to come up with a trail shoe for me?
I don't think so. We don't have the ability to do that just yet.
Yeah, I'm an old guy. I'm training for for the Vermont 50 right now.
Oh, okay.
So I'm spending all my time in the woods.
Yeah.
And,
is that part on trails or roads?
It's mostly single path stuff.
Wow.
It's just I back up against a conservation land, so
yeah.
It's my little 10K home loop.
Yeah.
But there's some rough patches.
Yeah, I've always wanted to do like a long trail race, but for me long would be like a half marathon to 20 miles or something.
Well, I had an interesting epiphany this week because I've been doing the program, and I'm getting to the point where I'm going to start putting in more miles in a week than I've ever put in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's interesting that I can still have this sort of undiscovered country in my running after all these years, right?
Yeah.
So it's interesting. It's something new, just like the mountain races.
How many miles are you considering doing?
Well, when I run a qualified marathon,
mm-hmm.
I can run a qualified marathon on 35 miles a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can do that, right?
Yeah.
I can run a good qualified marathon on 50 miles a week.
Right.
But these guys that got me up into a couple of 4 or 5 hour runs back to back on Saturday or Sunday.
Mm.
So, you know, my weekly mileage is going to be up in the 70, 80 mile, right?
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. But it's all low impact, you know, walk a lot, drink a lot, eat a lot kind of mileage. So it's interesting.
Mm.
I look to learn stuff, you know?
Huh. Yeah, I know. I actually used to be like a high mileage guy. I had years where I'd do nothing less than 70 miles a week and go up to 90 occasionally.
Yeah.
But it was
yeah.
all on the roads and it was all fast.
Right.
It was like, how quickly can you get your 20-miler done on a Saturday? Can you go 6:15 pace for 20 miles and get it done? Okay. That sounds good to me.
Yeah. Yep. So this is different. So what's your best marathon time? You're doing that for marathons?
Yeah, I was training for marathons. I ran 2:35 at Boston once.
That's great.
That was the year that Salazar and Beardsley dueled it out. The Duel in the Sun, that's the name of the book.
80-something.
82, yeah.
Yeah, 80-something.
82, yeah. It was 82. So it was about 89 degrees at the start, but then and I kind of blew up. I was going like 5:30 pace for a while, and I blew up going over the hills. But then when you went over the hills, the temperature dropped about 20 degrees.
Yep, with the old start time.
Yeah, because of the water off the ocean was cold and there was a breeze coming in, so
yep,
it was able to get back going again. But back then that was like 374th place at Boston, 2:35. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, you can't even get out of the crowd running sub-6-minute pace.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. No, and I remember that because I can remember dropping down into that slump into Boston and crashing and just being hypothermic, you know.
Yeah.
Because the temperature drops. We used the race used to start at noon, high noon, that was the tradition. And so you'd hit Boston around, you know, 2, 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And the temperature would drop by 10, 15 degrees, and you'd get a strong headwind off the sea, like you said. So if you were crashing and you're all soaked wet with sweat, you'd go into the hypothermia.
Yeah.
So it's much better now. The new start times are much better.
Yeah. But now my longest race is a half marathon, and I try to just get in shape to be able to run comfortably fast at whatever pace that is, and typically that's 7 to 7:30 pace for a half marathon. That's fine with me. That's still fun to accomplish something to race that long.
Yep. Yeah, that's where I'm at too. I don't have the time to train that hard, you know.
Stay tuned as next week, or next session, next episode, I guess it would be episode 5, we're going to do the second half of Mike's interview, because it was a little long, and I wanted to keep my commitment to keep the podcast under 40 minutes, so we're going to follow up next week, and look forward and stay with that.
Here's today's quick tips.
My tip for this episode is to get out and find yourself a mountain, find yourself a nice park. I'm going to talk about it in this next little vignette out at Mount Watatic, which is really, you could take the kids out there, you could hike that in 30 minutes with the kids, maybe 40 minutes, and there's tons of blueberries up there they can pick in the early summertime. It's really beautiful. So that's my tip, is look around and find yourself, probably within a couple miles, you can find someplace nice to go and enjoy the park system or the wilderness, because it's very life-affirming to get out there. So listen to this.
Hey, this is Chris. I'm out here in the parking lot, the trailhead of the Wapak Trail. It's part of the Mid-State Trail. I'm going to run this morning, Sunday morning, meeting a bunch of folks out here. Me and Buddy are going to run up the Wapak Trail, up Watatic, with a bunch of folks. It's good trail. It's maybe 40, 50 miles outside of Boston. I don't know. It's out 119. Just drive out 119 until you can't drive anymore. You'll go right by it. It's a beautiful trailhead. It's nice trail. There's a race here in the winter. One of the guys, not in the winter, in the fall, one of the guys I'm going to be running with, Paul, is the race director, and our club is actually sponsor that race as well. It's a great race. 17-mile Wapak Trail race. 17 miles, 4 mountains, and it's a tester, you know. It's not your Sunday 5K. I'm taking a little walk down here. Give Buddy, I know there's a little pond down here. I'll let Buddy go for a swim while I'm waiting for these folks. See if I can get a little blood flowing so I can stretch out. I ran for like 3 hours and 33 minutes and 31 seconds, according to my watch, yesterday, which was kind of a grind. It wasn't fun at all. But I'm starting to learn stuff with this ultra training. One of the things I'm learning is I'm going to have to get another pair of trail shoes, because they just don't dry fast enough if I'm going to be running all this time. And you go out, you just get soaked. It's been raining. Paint the picture for you. It's a deep forest, a lot of cedar, high bush blueberry, swamp maple, ferns underneath, old stone walls, a lot of moss and lichen, a little bit of the bullfrogs. You hear the bullfrogs? They're scaring Buddy. He's like, what the hell is that? What the hell is that? Aliens? So it's totally cloud covered. It's supposed to rain today. And it's alternately raining and sprinkling and cloudy and misty. So when we get to the top of the mountain, we're not going to be able to see anything. But it's good for running because it's nice and cool. It's just really humid. I was running yesterday. It was so humid. I was just totally soaked, which makes it kind of, you just can't wipe your hands off because you're totally soaked. Yeah, my feet are going to get wet today, too. So, you know, I've been stuffing my shoes with newspaper to try to get them to dry out. And they're just not drying out fast enough. So I'm going to have to get another pair of trail shoes, because running in them wet, it messes up the shoes. They're just not designed for it. You get blisters too, but the shoes just don't respond as well. It changes the whole response mechanism of the shoes. The inserts tend to slide out too, especially on the hills, on the mountains. So I'm going to have to get me some new trail shoes. That's just such a sad thing. I hate buying new shoes. But it has to be done. So.
Okay, that's it for this week, and I'm going to leave you with, I did actually find some Bruce Springsteen out on the PodSafe Music Network, so we'll leave that for Mike. We'll see how that sounds. And next week we're gonna follow up, or next episode. I keep saying next week. Next episode we're gonna follow up with Mike, second half of Mike's interview, and it's really, he talks a lot about the races he's doing now and some of the other things that are going on. So enjoy this, and we'll see you in a little bit. All right. The song is "Broken Radio" by Jesse Malin, and with guest vocals by The Boss.
I was thinking about another time, still in my mind. Well, I used to know a little girl high on this world. Your baby loves you more than you know. Raised on revelry and rock and roll. City, so she lets go on the radio. Well, we never had a lot of cash, but we love those kids. Some say that she missed the boat, but she just burned the bridge. The angels love you more. She used to talk about astrology. She was born in June. She'd dance with strangers and celebrities, empty stars in the full moon. I was singing about the universe for what it's worth. All the one about the phoenix bird that died and returned.